brought to you by bedroombattlefield.com. This is the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. On this episode of the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast, a brilliant chat with Ryan, aka Don Juan Don, from our Discord community. We cover a wide range of topics, including collaborative solo play campaigns, 3D printing, and the importance of doing physical, tangible, and analog hobbies in a world filled with increasing amounts of digital entertainment. This was our second attempt at having this conversation. We were let down by the recording software a few months prior, so if you hear any references to our previous chat, that's why. Anyway, let's crack on. I started off by asking Ryan what's on his painting table right now.
I'm probably not the only one who's a bit of a, you know, butterfly when it comes to what's on my painting table, but lately it's been a lot of Armada, Mantix Armada. So there's something about those ships that just make them such a dream to paint. They take bright colors so well, and you know, they're thematic and they're big and chonky, most of them. So they're just a joy to paint. So lately it's been the Trident Realms files from the Mantic Vault, because I've got a 3D printer and I've printed out probably more than I can paint. I'll have to enlist someone to help me finish them up. But that's what's been on my table lately. In addition to, I was doing a cyberpunk inspired mini for a friend in another Discord is organizing like a mini swap, almost like a, call it a Secret Santa type thing, where, you know, you're paired up with somebody and then you paint something that would be good for them and their table. And I actually just popped that in the mail today. So, hopefully it'll get there safe and sound.
What made you pick up Armada? Were you a Man of War fan back in the day? Or?
I wasn't. I love your podcast, and I absolutely love your community. You've got such a great community in the Discord. But I sometimes feel like a bit of an outlier, because I didn't play a lot of those old games. You know, I came into the hobby fairly late and never really picked up a GW game outside of Underworlds. Warhammer Underworlds I dabbled in. And so I saw it. Our hobby store had it, you know, when it first came out, our local shop. And I got a few ships from them and just kind of fell in love with painting it. And I got it to the table a couple times with my son and with a friend of mine. We don't have a big scene in my area who play it regularly. So it's just been kind of kitchen table games. But it's, and then once the vault, you know, once they started putting the files on the Mantic Vault, it was a, you know, the path was pretty clear that the printer was going to be spitting them out and I was going to be painting them. So,
what do you like about the Armada rules?
I think the rules are fine. You know, I think they're good. I like rolling a lot of dice, feels good. I like the way the ships move with the way I played a lot of X-Wing. So, you know, ships with or models with limited or prescribed movement, I don't know, kind of call to me a little bit. I've also played the Star Wars Armada game. And so I really enjoyed the movement. And honestly, you know, I'm not sure how much you've played of Armada, but it looks really gorgeous on the table. You know, if you get a board set up with a couple fleets and, you know, set of 3D printed islands and sandbars and everything, it's just a really immersive game to see on the table, I think. So that's probably the biggest draw, but you know, the rules would definitely be the movement, I think. We're talking rules specifically.
You talked about coming into the hobby not through maybe what would be the sort of traditional route that we hear on this show. So talk to us a wee bit about your hobby origins.
Yeah. I guess I misspoke a bit, because if you consider HeroQuest, you know, I'm going to give you the standard HeroQuest kid response. But, you know, for a guy my age, I think that's not an uncommon way to come in. But a buddy of mine, when we were really little, you know, had a copy of HeroQuest. And his brother, you know, ran it ran it for, you know, put in air quotes, for us. And I just really, really enjoyed it. It was a great time. And it kind of got my itch going a little more than, you know, the standard. Beyond that, it was the standard, you know, Monopoly. And I play a lot of card games with my family, things like that. And he also had a copy of Battle Masters. So I can add that one. I guess I can chalk that one up to the list, even though that was, you know, 30 odd some years ago. But that was kind of how I would say I started. And then when I got to middle school, I had a couple friends who were starting to play Magic. So I played, I wouldn't say a lot of Magic by today's standards, but, you know, for a middle schooler, it was probably a lot, back in the Ice Age days. That'll date me. And, you know, played Magic, and then it kind of just went on hiatus for quite a while. Honestly, probably until college is when I had stumbled across a local game store in my town, in our college town, and just, you know, was in there kind of poking my head around and chatting up the folks that work there. And they recommended, you know, a couple games, and I ended up picking up Carcassonne. And that, I think, was, you know, the entry into what you might call designer board games, kind of started that spiral, right? That's what really, really ignited, you know, my enjoyment, my love for the hobby. So, a lot of board games that time, you know, I found BGG, in the Dice Tower, and spent probably way too much time and money thinking or acquiring or playing board games. And then that, you know, that continued. And then I can, you know, I guess my first step into, you know, what you might consider, you know, wargaming proper or more hobby wargaming versus board gaming was a friend of mine whom I had known from since, oh my goodness, probably elementary school, had reached out. We had played some board games, had reached out and said he was getting into Hordes, because Hordes was releasing the War Machine sister game. And I picked up a Legion of Everblight starter box, and we kind of dove into that. And that's what really kind of started me down the path of, you know, hobby war games. So you could say that was probably my entry point for, you know, what I'm doing now.
Other than Armada, what games are you really keen on?
So I still really enjoy X-Wing, you know, rest in peace. But I still think it's a great game. You know, I think it's a great system. I enjoy, you know, just pushing Star Wars ships around the table. And then otherwise I've been kind of dabbling in smaller games. It's been a lot of solo games. So games like 5 Parsecs has spent a lot of time on my table. And then there are a handful of really small games, Cyberforge, the minis, the artists have come out with a game called Grid Runner, which is played on a grid. And then similar to that, there's a game called, Koroi, which is a downloadable game. That's incredibly fun. I think we were chatting about that on the Discord a while back, and it's been mostly solo co-op, you know, that kind of stuff, just dabbling in a lot of different things and making components for them. So,
yeah, I was going to ask you about that. What got you into the 3D printing initially?
So the 3D printing, you know, the construction piece of it, I started years ago with an old Ender 3. I got into it just because, you know, I'm an engineer by trade, and, you know, I just enjoy tinkering and mechanical things, and I picked it up. Man, it's been a while. I picked it up kind of with the intent of making functional stuff, you know, stuff around the house or engineering type projects. And then soon kind of found that, oh, I can make tabletop stuff for that. I can make asteroids for X-Wing, right? I can make card boxes or ship storage containers and that kind of thing. And these weren't my designs. These were things other people have created. And that kind of started me down that rabbit hole with 3D printing, which was, you know, FDM printing at the time. And then kind of stumbled into, I tried to print some figures for Parsecs. I'm not sure how familiar you are with 3D printing, but FDM printing, the filament-based printing, you know, you can print figures with it, but it's not, you know, it's not designed for that, especially when you're comparing it to things you might buy at the store, right? So that's where kind of the resin, that's when I started looking into resin more seriously because I wanted to do more minis rather than just terrain pieces.
So you're doing a lot of miniatures now. I mean, you talked about printing out Armada ships. So what other sort of miniatures are you making?
Oh, everything. I think, you know, we talk about our pile of shame, right? Or pile of potential, if you want to give it a better name. But nothing makes you stack up gray plastic faster than the ability to make it at home for pennies on the dollar, you know? So, I've been printing a lot of, some 28 millimeter stuff. Lately it's been a lot of 15 millimeter stuff. I've been trying to adapt some games like 5 Parsecs or, that Hobgoblin one that Mike Hutchinson has just put out. You know, I was a backer for that, a digital backer. So I've got the rules for that. So I've been toying around with putting together kind of a multi-based, maybe a couple small forces in 15 millimeter and, you know, maybe some single base stuff for 5 Leagues, which is kind of the 5 Parsecs fantasy sister game. And then obviously Armada. And then just a lot of random figures from, you know, independent creators or Patreon creators, just the ones I think are neat and then spending some time painting them up, even if there's not a game attached to them.
What attracted you to 15 mil scale then?
I think the biggest one was just the size. I mean, it sounds silly to say, but, you know, I know you just, I don't want to dovetail this in too much, but I know that you just talked about, you know, in your recent episode about your travel setup and the idea of portability and simplicity is just really elegant to me. You know, printing large pieces of terrain like houses or ruins in 28 millimeter on a filament printer takes a long time. But when you scale it down, you know, by 50%, it takes, you know, nominally, it takes a quarter of that time, right? So I think the ease of storage is just really nice, but you still can capture the detail. You don't get the detail you get in 28, but you still get a lot. And when you're hovering over a table, you'd kind of be surprised at how little the fine details on a 28 millimeter figure really matter when you're, you know, 3 or 4 feet away. So that's kind of what's interest me is almost just that. It sounds, you know, reductive, but just the convenience of it, right? It's just a very convenient scale.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's definitely what attracted me to it initially. And now that I'm building these armies, the sort of rank and file armies, rank and flank armies, just seems like a perfect size for them. You know, the footprint of the units as well. So, what was that you saying that you've got Hobgoblin as well? So you're going to be playing that at 15 mil?
Yeah, I think so. Well, I'm gonna be constructing a few forces in 15 mil. Let's be honest. I don't feel like I get to play as much as I would like to nowadays, but I'd like to get it to the table. That is a goal. But at a minimum, I just haven't dabbled much in that type of gaming. And it's just an area I'd kind of want to, you know, poke a little bit and explore. So I think Hobgoblin would be a nice entry point just with how flexible it is.
Did I see that you were talking about creating accessories like you talked about travel painting kits and different sort of storage and that? Like, what's the deal there?
Yeah, so I think it's the engineer in me, you know, kind of colliding with the tabletop gamer in me. So I've kind of learned, it's been interesting, but, you know, painting especially, gaming obviously, you know, as well, but painting especially and creating has really kind of brought a lot of satisfaction to me personally. As a, maybe it's just because I'm getting older, but you know, this idea of creating something. So I've been looking for ways to, you know, I'm sure there's a term for it, but, you know, I'm trying to break down the barriers and reduce the activation energy for the things I want to do, or the things I feel like I should be doing, or the things that bring me satisfaction. And I've been trying to increase the barriers, you know, between maybe the behaviors that I'd like to, you know, eventually cut out of my life, you know, that kind of thing. And part of that for me has been the ability to spin up how fast can I be painting? Because I would imagine for a lot of folks, I mean, I was this way, where, you know, if I had to gather my stuff, find the right paints, you know, get them out of the bin, or I've got, you know, maybe my painting setup is in the basement because it's the only place I can have everything. You know, I don't want to go sit in the basement, you know, when it's gorgeous outside and, you know, be huddled in a corner in the furnace room. So I kind of gave myself a bit of a challenge, not unlike what you're doing with the tin gaming, is I said, well, what if, you know, what if I took the materials that I use the most, you know, the ones that get hit 85% of the time, you know, what if I compiled those so that way I could just, when I felt the urge to hobby, I just grab them and go, you know? And that kind of, you know, it started as, well, I'll keep my most frequently used paints just in a, you know, an organizer you get from the hardware store, right? And then I said, okay, well, this is great because it got me painting, right? Anytime I wanted to paint, I grabbed the case, had the models I was working on, had the paints for those models, had the brushes, you know, had a you know, just a ball jar, like a pint-sized jar to hold water. You know, had maybe a hobby knife in it and some glue. Like, everything was there. I could just grab it and I could work at the kitchen table, or I could, you know, I like to work outside, so I was work on the back porch. And, you know, then that cascaded into, well, what could I make it more portable, right? Could I make it expandable? Could I make it something I could share with other people? And that's where I pulled up some, you know, CAD software and started sketching and came up with a design that, you know, is kind of stackable, similar. I think there are a number of companies that do something kind of like this, like Corvus makes a really nice kit, but it's kind of small. And this is larger, and the pieces that stack together are designed to hold different kinds of paints or different, you know, different pieces of hobby equipment. And then it's all magnetic, so they just click together into a stack, you know, that you can throw on the shelf and kind of be running at a moment's notice. So that was kind of the genesis of that.
The Bedroom Battlefields Patreon now comes with bonus content, the first of which is a full battle report from White Dwarf issue 166. I read through this iconic showdown from 1993 between Blood Angels General Andy Chambers and Orc Warboss Jervis Johnson, as they showcase the new Warhammer 40,000 second edition. Find out more at patreon.com/bedroombattlefields. That's patreon.com/bedroombattlefields. And now, back to the show. Something I wanted to ask you about was the... it was something that came up in the Discord last week, I think it was. So we started talking about, you know, what if... Because there's a lot of folks out there playing solo these days for various different reasons. And it was... you know, the question of what if all of the games that we're individually playing solo, what if there was this, you know, loose narrative around it all that could feed into a collaborative campaign, you know, and each game that you played was you know, loosely impacting someone else's game elsewhere. You know, we're kind of throwing ideas around there. Looks like we're kind of set now and everyone's going to have this wizard called Jeff, which is quite funny. Yeah.
That's great.
But you were talking about, you know, you seem to have some experience in this with, is it the Hobby Homies 5 Parsecs from Home campaign? So what's the crack there?
Yeah, I hesitate to mention because I think last time I mentioned the name of that podcast was when our recording disconnected. So, you know, let it be known you've asked for this. So that's just, you know, they're another podcast. They've got a great community as well. And they were doing a lot of, they're just a big interest in that community for 5 Parsecs. I'm not sure if you've played it or dabbled in it or even read it, but it's a great system. It's, you know, it's one of my favorite games. If I had to, you know, if I could only keep a few, right, I think Parsecs would be, I don't know if it'd be at the top of that. It might be. I don't know if it'd be at the top of that list, but it would be damn near the top. So they kind of were exploring the same thing, which was how, you know, in Parsecs, you know, you have a crew that's your own crew, but how do we, or when I say we, I mean, you know, they, how do they create a system where folks can play their own games, but have it feed into a greater narrative? And they started out, and I can't remember what exactly they started with because it blended over the months. This went on for, oh man, darn near a year, maybe. I mean, it was a long time. Again, my short term memory causes me to mix up my dates and stuff, but it was a while. And at one point, they handed it off to a fella in the Discord, who's a, you know, lifelong DM and just absolutely brilliant. And he took it, you know, he took it to the next level. I'm not sure. I can't remember exactly how far, but you know, he added quite a bit to it as far as overarching narrative. But the elevator pitch is that, you know, everyone rolls up their own crew, and then they're part of a guild, which was everyone who wanted to participate. And I think maybe at one point we had probably 10 to 15 folks doing it, which was really neat. And you know, at the beginning of the month or, you know, at the beginning of a cycle, they were on monthly cycles. The, Ollie, the DM would put up a missions board with a group of missions that he had created that were, you know, there was one high priority mission and everyone was, obviously it's a game, so no one's going to, you know, come to your house and beat you up if you don't. But, you know, it was expected that everyone would take at least one mission from the critical board. And then there was a number of optional missions you could do, you know, as much as you wanted. And, you know, you'd complete the mission on your own. And then they had a little Google form that you'd fill out, you know, the results and how many credits and did you get anything that, you know, would be helpful for the guild and that kind of stuff. And they had a guild ship that we all were part of. And we were all kind of on the same planet because in Parsecs, you can hop from planet to planet. And so we would vote when we wanted to move to another planet. And the credits that people earned could be used for their own crew, but also could be given to the guild. And then there were guild ship upgrades that we would vote on. You know, we're going to get this room added, which will allow your crew members to reroll one, you know, during their next mission for free or something. So it grew quite a bit, became pretty elaborate. It was just a really good time and people would post battle reports. You know, I never posted battle reports in my life until this thing started. And I remember I was taking pictures after every turn and trying to write up, you know, battle reports that weren't mechanical. They were, you know, so-and-so missed a shot and fell back to cover. And I tried to write it with a little more narrative focus and it was just a really good time. You know, so I think, as you continue to explore this Jeffiverse thing, I saw the file. I think I'm gonna print one out for myself as well if it's not too late. But you know, if done right, I think you guys could really have something fun here that's memorable for a lot of folks. Because I know the Parsecs campaign is probably one of my highlights in gaming in the last, you know, decade, 5 to 10 years. You know, it was just a very, really enjoyable thing.
Yeah, based on, you know, what you're saying about how it worked there, it does sound brilliant. Obviously, these things will have a lot of challenges, but, you know, it must have been pretty cohesive to go on for that length of time. What kind of brought it to a close, if you're aware?
I don't really know. I know, you know, I guess I can speak to the things I would assume, right, or not, is, you know, we had some people just due to life, you know, kind of falling off and not being able to contribute like they could. I'm pretty sure it was a lot of work for Ollie, who was DMing it, right? I mean, we had political coups, you know, on planets where, you know, when certain missions would get completed, it would overthrow a section of, you know, the local government, and then we voted on how we wanted to handle it. And I mean, he was legitimately DMing this thing. And I think that probably, you know, he was doing all the Google Forms, and I'm sure people, you know, I'm guilty of it, 1 or 2 months at least, where they're, you know, they're turning in their Google Forms 4 hours before the deadline. So I think it was just a lot of work for him. I think people were incredibly grateful. I know I was, you know, just incredibly grateful for the effort that was put in and that kind of thing. But I'm guessing that probably impacted it as well. Maybe a combination of life and just the, you know, and just the ask for one person. I think if you wanted to continue it, you'd have to come up with, you know, maybe a little more, expand on the way, I won't say logistics, right? But the administration piece of it, you'd really have to think through. I think they did a great job, but it, you know, definitely, I would imagine as more people came on board, it probably stressed the system.
Yeah, I mean, it does sound like the more tighter and more cohesive it is, the more work it is, at least for, you know, one person minimum. The idea we've kind of got so far for Jeff the Wizard is, it seems pretty loose. You know, the concept is that this guy, there's a few different reasons why he's kind of hopping through time and space, just pop him up in different places, looking a little bit different each time because we're all going to have different painted versions of him. But
yeah.
Quite a hapless character. You know, we've started batting around ideas for a failed spell table. Stuff like his beard catching fire. He accidentally brings a house to life and it attacks him. So funny stuff, silly stuff that you know, won't be over the top and won't dominate the game, but now and then there'll be the opportunity for something ridiculous and thematic to happen. So, you know, how we make those games impact each other remains to be seen, and I dare say we'll have more discussion about that. I'm thinking about doing a voice chat in the Discord, similar to what David and Mark have been doing with the Royal Orc, but just to focus on that and kind of get folks' inputs rather than it being sort of asynchronous, back and forward. I think just to get everyone together would be quite good. I mean, possibly be able to record that and put it on the show. It just depends on the audio, what that's like on Discord, but we'll see. But obviously, if anyone listening wants to get involved as well, the Discord is where they'll find it all. But the miniature itself looks really cool, doesn't it? I'm going to get mine off edit, bring out your lead in August. So,
that's fantastic. I saw the mini and you know, said, oh, I've got to, at a minimum, I've got to paint one of these. You know, just so I'm ready. So. I would love to be, you know, at a minimum, just a fly on the wall. I mean, I'd contribute wherever I can, but, you know, just to see, hear what the ideas were and, you know, and how people plan on doing it. But I think, you know, the one thing that I learned a lot of things, but one of the big things I learned with this 5 parsecs thing is, you know, it's the people that make it work, right? You know, you can... you can be coming up with a game and try to think through all the mechanics and, oh, what if so-and-so, you know, gives Jeff 7 magic items and completely breaks the system. That doesn't happen because people have a shared vision of what they're trying to do. You know what I mean? And it seems like you've got a pretty good group in that thread that's interested in doing this. And it's really the people that make these things so special, you know? So I'm excited. I think it'll be really cool. I think you guys can really come up with something neat.
Are you printed a Jeff then yet? No,
I haven't. I actually, we talk about adding barriers. So I had noticed I was just printing faster than I could paint. So I started emptying my resin vat when I was done with a job because it would force me to refill it to do another one. So I wouldn't be printing just because it's sitting there idle. Right. So, Jeff is on my 2 print list. But I'm not going to fill it yet because I think there are a few more Armada ships I want to add to the plate, and I didn't want to print Jeff and then, you know, spend more time emptying and cleaning the resin vat than I did actually printing the figure. So, but he's on my to-do list.
Last time we spoke, we talked a fair bit about, you know, the creation versus consumption thing. And, you know, watching TV shows, playing video games, nothing wrong with that at all. But I notice a lot of folks, myself included, prefer to get into the physical realm as much as they can. You know, doing things like the hobby or even, you know, other physical things, whether that's gardening or fixing a motorbike. Not that I could do any of those very well, but you know what I mean? Like, for what I remember, it was something that you were definitely conscious of yourself.
Yeah, it's been and this is probably a whole hour long discussion in and of itself, but it's been an interesting journey, you know, as I've gotten older. I don't want to say old, right? But as I've gotten a little older, you know, I think I've gone through, you know, we all do, right? We go through changes and everything. And, you know, I had noticed that, you know, the things that I used to really enjoy, like you mentioned, things like video games or watching TV and that kind of thing, weren't bringing me the satisfaction that they used to, right? It doesn't mean they were bad. They were enjoyable in the moment, but they just didn't. You know, I'd shut off my PlayStation after a night of, you know, playing The Last of Us or something by myself. And I think it was different when I would play with friends because it was a social experience. But, you know, I'd sit down and play a single player game or a role-playing game or something that on the PlayStation that I really enjoyed. And I enjoyed it in the moment. And then when I'd stop, I'd kind of, I don't know, I just, it felt like I was in a funk, you know, like it wasn't explicit, like, what the hell did I just do? It was just just something fell off. And, you know, I kind of went through that for a while, and it kind of descended almost like I don't want to get too deep into mental health here, but like kind of a general malaise, right? Just where I felt like the things I was doing weren't driving me like they used to. And it caused me to really do some deep diving into, you know, as an engineer with that like science focused brain, you know, I've got my journal and I've got my list, and which side of the column does this activity fall into based on how it made me feel last time I did it. And I kind of started to look at the things that I really enjoyed. And at the time, I was my youngest son, I had just started coaching his soccer team, just with a rec league here, and with another buddy of mine. And sure, you know, parts of that were a pain in the ass. Like, you know, you got bad parents and, you know, people calling you and complaining and why isn't Johnny on the field more and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But all in all, the kids were great. And it was just I was sharing something and I was teaching something. And I just got a lot out of that. And I looked at, you know, I do not as much as I used to, but, you know, I still do some woodworking and, you know, repairing things around the house. And even though sometimes those tasks feel like painful in the moment, I just felt really good after I was done with them. And it kind of drove me to realize that, you know, I could almost lump these activities into two buckets. And I know that, you know, gross categorization is sometimes dangerous, but I could put them into the creation bucket. You know, was I creating something? Was I teaching something? Was I, you know, giving outward, right? Or was I consuming, right? Was this a consumption-based activity where the world was coming into me versus a creation-based activity where I felt like I was turning outward to the rest of the world? And I know that sounds really weird and philosophical and, you know, kind of out there, but I'll tell you what, like, it really, that was the theme, you know? And that's when I really kind of dove into, you know, art and sketching and, you know, I used to love to draw, and I'm not great at it, but, you know, I love sketching and miniature painting and, you know, then that became, you know, digital sculpting, and just activities where I felt like I was building something or creating something or making something that wasn't previously there. Right. If that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. Hopefully this isn't, you know, you're not just rolling your eyes at the crazy guy on the other end of the phone here, but, that's true, man. That's how it felt.
Yeah, definitely. Do you ever paint or that sort of late at night and notice how that impacts how you wind down and sleep?
Oh, 100%. 100%. My sleep gets better. You know, I remember looking at, you know, my Fitbit one time, and it wasn't a stressful day or anything. You know, it was just a normal day. And I was in the middle of painting, and I was definitely, you know when you hit it, when you're in that flow state where, you know, time kind of slows down and the rest of the world kind of goes quiet and monochrome, and like you are just, it's you and what you're doing, right? And it's just I just love that, you know, I'm like addicted to that feeling. And I remember doing that and then finishing, and I had turned the model in a way that my Fitbit was kind of like exposed to my vision. And I looked down and my heart rate had dropped like 10 beats per minute. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It was just, it was weird. And sure enough, it's just, you got controlled breathing and you're just very focused, and any of those outside stressors just kind of melted away, you know, at least for the time being.
Yeah. I mean, we talked on our last conversation about a couple of books, obviously Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. Very philosophical book, but just a really, really good read. I've read it a couple of times. And then another book I pointed you to, Shopcraft for Soul Craft. I get the name wrong
shop,
all the time.
Shop class for Soul Craft.
That's it.
Was
that's
the
right.
Book, if I remember right.
But you said you said you weren't keen on that one. Was it just the sort of writing style, I think you said?
Yeah, I really enjoyed the you know, the elevator pitch of it, and, you know, call it the back of the book, right? And I enjoyed the message that the author was trying to convey as far as, you know, this lost art of working with our hands, right? And how everything has moved, not everything, but many things have moved away from that. The way the author wrote, he was just a little wordy for me. I couldn't, you know, it's like a great set of lyrics with a bad singer. I feel bad, but I couldn't, it's like had somebody else rewritten this, it would have been, you know, just a top book for me. Cause the message that was being conveyed, I think was something that really resonated with me, right? As someone who works behind a computer all day, I see that value.
Do you read a lot of nonfiction?
It depends. You know, I'm in a monthly book club. We bounce around between fiction and nonfiction. I have been delinquent in the last few, so we actually have a call tonight to discuss the latest book, and I did not finish it, so I'm sure I'm going to get an earful about that. But honestly, you know, I enjoy reading, but lately most of the things I've been reading have been, you know, tabletop focused, or, you know, I've been painting. It's just a kind of my reading goes in and out, And right now, you know, probably in the last 6 to 12 months, it's been kind of on a down cycle just because other things have been kind of taken over. I'm sure it'll pick back up again.
You mentioned your son there. Do you get much hobbying with him?
I do, actually. Well, I shouldn't say a ton, but, you know, I get a fair amount. Both of my kids, I have two boys, and they both enjoy gaming in general. You know, we play a lot of board games. They're not as keen on the tabletop war games, although my younger son does enjoy Armada. So, you know, he's my go-to opponent for that at home. But we play a lot of board games, and then they are actually in, it's actually really cool to see, they're both in, my older son's in a D&D group, and my younger son is in two D&D groups. So, you know, and someone my age, you know, growing up in the Midwest, the US, like that, you know, that just like wasn't a thing when I was a kid. You know, you get beat up for talking about D&D. So, it's really cool to see them getting to explore that and really getting into it. So that's their thing. So we've printed their characters, you know, whenever they spin up new characters and they want to, we print them a character and then we sit down and, you know, I'm generally painting on something else, but they'll sit down and paint, you know, their new D&D character and it's fun.
Just as we kind of come towards the end of our time, Ryan, is there anything that we've not covered that you were particularly keen to talk about?
Think so. I mean, I think, you know, this was just kind of a fun chat through some of this stuff and I can't think of anything that, you know, I feel like I missed other, you know, I would like to continue the discussion at some point and probably in the Discord on your Jeffiverse campaign. Cause I just, man, that's right in my wheelhouse for things that I enjoy. So I'm excited to see where that goes.
Yeah, it'll be good fun to see how that pans out. You know, I'm sure, especially over the next month or two when everyone actually gets their miniatures, certainly I'm incapable of doing any sort of 3D printing. So, once everyone sort of gets those, gets them painted up, I think we'll kick that up a gear and see what we're actually going to do with it. But like I was saying, if anyone wants to get involved as well, just jump into the Discord, bedroombattlefields.com/discord is where you'll find that. Ryan, anywhere folks could go to check out any of your work, any of your 3D designs or anything like that?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. So I do have a small cult 3D shop where I put some stuff up. Some of it's free. You know, some of it I put a price on. It's not very expensive. Honestly, it's paid for my filament, right? So it's kind of continued its you know, pays it forward as I'm just using it to make more terrain. But it's under Voxel Corgi. So Voxel is in like the 3D pixels, and then Corgi is like the dog. And I add stuff there. I don't really, you know, I've had a couple people ask me for certain things. I still don't consider myself great at sculpting yet. I certainly don't do characters or anything like that. But everything I've put up there has been something that I've designed for myself. You know, like, oh, I want this for my game. And then once I print it and I like it, then I throw the STLs up just, you know, because the incremental cost to do that is nothing, right? So over the time I've built a, you know, I wouldn't say a healthy collection, but like I got a little collection going. So if people want to check that out, you know, that'd be awesome.
Big thanks to Ryan there, a brilliant chat, and I'm delighted we could finally get it over the line after our software issues the first time around. I've just one final wee thing to mention, and that's a reminder to submit your answers to the July question of the month. I want to hear about your favourite hobby content channels, such as blogs, podcasts, YouTube channels, or social accounts. And while you're at it, tell us all about your own hobby content channel if you have one. At the time of recording, I have a grand total of 0 answers in. Either that suggests that this show is so good that you simply don't need any other hobby content in your life, or that you need to get the finger out, and head on over to bedroombattlefields.com/voicemail to submit yours today. I look forward to listening to it. Right, off you go and do that now, please. I'll shut up and leave you to it. And we'll speak again on the next episode.